And we'll start with...
We're recording, just keep starting.
Okay.
Satish, report.
Satish.
Satish, sorry, I'm always crucifying your name. On the uniform rent issue.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, in reference to the subcommittee, we are preparing a detailed memo on that. In the meantime, I can tell you briefly why the uniform rent has gone up higher. Basically, there are three issues. Firstly, the general uniform rent has been subsidized so far with general fund. A rent stabilization account was established around 10 years ago, and that fund has been spent down, one main reason being Y2K. So, in fact, you will see a larger increase the next biennium. This will be the last biennium. I'm told by DAS facilities that this is the last biennium that uniform rent is going to be subsidized with general fund. Well, that's number one. The second issue is debt service. Because of new construction projects, debt service has gone up. For the next biennium, there is like 10 cents per square feet per month that is being charged to partly offset the cost of debt service. To summarize, uniform rent has been lower than private rent. In fact, I've just been handed some more stuff on the uniform rent.
That's always helpful, isn't it?
It is, Madam Chair. When the governor's budget was being developed, first the uniform rent was $1.14 per square feet, and that got reduced based on some new information to $1.11. And all of this was discussed when the DAS budget was presented to you earlier. So that is the main reason why you see a 13% increase for uniform rent. And on the private rent, we are the factor that was allowed was 4.5%. If an agency felt that the 4.5% increase was inadequate, they could either request an exception to budget and management, or they could submit a policy package. So in the budget process, it was made sure that agencies' rent needs were adequately being met.
Representative Butler.
And the obvious question there, Satish, is what happens if the private rent is only going up 2% or doesn't go up at all during that biennium? They get a five-year lease.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, that's a very good question. In fact, what we do is if the rent does not increase by that amount, then the agencies do not get the 4.5% increase. During the budget development phase, we make sure that only the adequate amount of funding is provided.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you very much. Nice to see you again, Sarah. Next, we have someone who lives more than 100 miles from Salem, and so we'll ask for your testimony first, if you'd like to come up. Jane Schmidt.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Gene Schmidt. I come from Prineville, Oregon. I'm here to speak to in support of Oregon OSHA's budget for the worksite redevelopment or redesign committee. A little bit about my company. We're a small company. In Central Oregon, there's not a lot of industry over there, and quite frankly, we employ about 600 people in total. Most of those, of course, are hourly production workers, 460 some odd or that, and the rest are salaried. Over the years, we've been established since 1946, and over the years, we have developed and had to retool several years ago because we just had a difficult time making it in the commodities type market. And we have retooled and gone through a major renovation to where we're in a much higher technology area. And we're competing globally. We have, of course, the normal problems with wood products industries where offshore wood is flowing into the country and much cheaper than we can produce from our own domestic programs. We are, I think, fairly modern for being on the other side of the mountains. We embrace the principles of lean manufacturing, our employee production empowerment, and we try to implement on a continual basis continuous improvement in order to compete globally. Though we've been in that production since 1946, in woodworking tools and equipment on basic things like cut lines have changed very little over the past 40 years. And we experience and continue to experience a lot of soft tissue injuries to our employees who have to repetitively turn boards in order to cut them for our customers. And it is our desire, I can't tell you that we've ever tried to access this group before, but I can tell you that we feel a need to now, and we simply are trying to cope with the repetitive motion type injuries, soft tissue injuries that are so prevalent in our particular industry today. I'm here to ask you, give you a little background there, I guess, excuse me, that we've had 37 claims just on the chop saw operator positions in the past 5 years, which have, in fact, impacted us adversely from a profit standpoint. Those claims costs were $166,625. But worse than that monetary loss is the loss of our people. We do not have an unlimited labor pool in Central Oregon. We have jobs literally go begging every year to the tune of 30 or 40 at a time because we can't find enough people to adequately staff ourselves. So losing people to soft tissue injuries is has much a far greater impact, quite frankly, than the financial claims cost. We suffer from carpal tunnel syndrome to elbow tendonitis and a myriad of other soft tissue injuries. There are also 8 other companies engaged in doing like or similar business in Central Oregon compared to us. We all have the same problem. We're looking at 564 on a conservative basis, 564 cutting positions amongst those 8 companies in Central Oregon. So if their experience data is anywhere near ours, we're looking at well over $1 million in claims. And again, the worst thing, the loss of the employees. I personally am abhorrent about causing pain and suffering to our employees. And quite frankly, we have to do and are very active in our safety programs to attempt to reduce or eliminate injuries to our employees. We simply can't replace them. They simply aren't out there to be had. I am here to urge you to please fund adequately that worksite redesign program in the Oregon OSHA budget. We would love and do partner with Oregon OSHA. And quite frankly, we would like nothing better than to win their coveted Sharps Award, but we don't have a research and a development budget. It's just non-existent, nor do any of my competitors. I guess I would just ask this body individually and corporately to support the funding for that program. I want you to know that it is of critical importance to us. I think it's a program whose time has really come. You know, oftentimes these things kind of get out and run ahead, but it frankly is something that's very useful and needful in the current climate. I guess that's all that I have for you folks. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Schmidt. I appreciate you coming over. I hope you made it across the pass. I understand we had a lot of snow over there. I talked to my husband and Ben last night, and he said there'd been quite a bit of snow.
Actually, it wasn't too bad, but it was sure nice to see some snow up on the off of the highway because we certainly need that. The highway
moisture, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Let me see if we have any other questions. I just see that you're in good company here. Representative Johnson grew up in Redmond. Cedric Hayden has some property over near Brothers. and of course representing Butler's from Ontario, so you're speaking to folks.
Oh, wonderful.
Representing Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Smith, in the worksite redesign program from Oregon OSHA, tell me, how have they assisted you at the worksite? Some specific example of how they have come to the worksite and have made your operations safer and more productive.
We're just in the process of getting that to happen for the very first time. We have had, we're also working in conjunction with OMAP. We have had Mike Lule come out and try to assess whether or not we really had situation that could be resolved and that would be extremely helpful. And of course, during that process, we have agreed and in fact do desire to share our resolution with everyone because we all have the same problem. What we intend to do is to set up a prototype cut saw operation where our cutters can see the entire side of the board so that they don't have to flip these boards constantly to look down the boards, see where the defects are, and cut those out. That's been going on for 40 years. There is nothing on the market that we can buy or we would have already purchased it. We're looking at an automatic board turner. We're looking at being able to view with mirrors, et cetera, all four sides of that board at the same time. My opinion is we probably won't completely eliminate the need to turn the boards, but I can see a drastic reduction in that. And if we can get that drastic reduction, we are bound to reduce the number of carpal tunnel and elbow tendonitis type injuries. And Oregon OSHA has been very helpful in coming out and talking us through and encouraging this. I frankly appreciate their partnering attitude with us, because that's a problem we haven't been able to solve.
Two follow-ups. That number one, I take it, Mr. Smith, and they have been somewhat proactive. And number two, do they just provide the consulting, or do they give a grant out of this money?
We're requesting a grant, sir, for a prototype on that, Representative Butler.
Thank you,
Representative Johnson.
I apologize for coming in from another meeting a little bit late. What company are you with?
I'm sorry, I'm with Contact Lumber Company. That's the parent company, and we do business in Prineville as Clear Pine Molding, and also in Lakeview, a much, much smaller operation known as Heart Mountain Millwork.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Curtis Clear Pine Molding.
Yes.
You understand, of course, that the agency has some revenue shortfalls, and this is one of the reduction packages, not necessarily a decision we've made. We have to try to figure out how to help them meet their revenue shortfall.
Yes, Senator Clarno, that's precisely why I'm here. I know that they're currently funded at $1.8 million per year, and I have to live within budgets as well, of course, being in business, and I fully understand and appreciate that. I guess I'm asking that a deeper look be made, and if at all possible, to please support them.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming over to share your testimony. I know it's a long ways, and have a safe trip home.
Thank you very much, Madam
Especially
Chair.
Especially since we can't have set of tires. And that's a whole other The pass was actually closed about a week after the studs were taken off. The pass was closed the night of April 10th because of the snow.
Madam Chair, it was snowing in the foothills and in the Willamette Valley on April 2.
Mm-hmm. But we need the moisture, so we're glad for that.
They need the studs, too.
Mm-hmm. And like I say, that's another committee. Okay, next on the agenda, we have Genoa Ingram. Genoa, good morning. Come on up.
Madam Chairman, I would like to call a witness to join me, please.
Certainly.
Mr. Jeff Molitor.
Sure. Please come forward. I thought that was a name I knew from, say, Klamath Falls, but it doesn't say it. You're 100 miles away, so it must be another
Molitor. Yeah, I'm sure my family, many of my family do live in Klamath Falls.
Recognize the name. Know some of them. Was it open? General, you haven't been before this committee this morning or at all this session, but you probably know what the piggy bank is about.
Madam Chairman, I have already briefed my client regarding acronyms.
Okay.
Thank you.
But it is for a good cause, American Cancer Society.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Genoa Ingram with Western Advocates, and I am representing this morning the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. However, by sheer coincidence, I represent two other clients who are extremely interested in the worksite redesign program, and I'll touch on that in a moment briefly. I've gathered a great deal of information about this program and about the people who use it. I know that your time is very tight, that you're anxious to move the budgets out of the committee. So what I would like to do is to briefly summarize my written testimony, and then I have a few additional comments that that I would like to make for you. The Oregon Manufacturing Extension Project is a consulting group that works with businesses and employers to address the sorts of problems that Mr. Schmidt so eloquently outlined for you. When there are not products available to purchase to address the problem, then, if I may, OMEP, Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, will come in and actually design the products needed to address the types of injuries that were discussed. By sheer coincidence, I recently acquired several new clients. One of those is the Oregon Fire District Directors Association. And 2 weeks ago, I was down in Philomath for a directors meeting for the firefighters. And at that time, there was the training session centered around how to decrease workers' compensation claims. And there was a representative from the insurance company, and there were also there were several attorneys present, and they were focusing on how to reduce these types of claims. At the end of the training session, without any prompting from me, they held up their brochure that you have in front of you, Representative Johnson, and they said, "This is an excellent program that you need to take advantage of that will help you make your workplace safer." And I was just struck by the, you know, how things sometimes fall together. And I thought, well, you know, we really need to preserve this program. And I had already begun working with Mr. Molitor to see that that happens. I want to break away just a little bit from my written testimony. I want to make something very, very clear. As I've been around the Capitol talking to different legislators, the thing that keeps coming up is the question, is this the same federal program that was just recently rescinded by President Bush? And I want to make it extremely clear to you, this is not the same program. This program has been around for, as far as I can tell, longer than former President Clinton was in office. It predates him. And the difference between the two programs, if I may very clearly outline that for you, the federal program was a regulatory mandate. If that sort of program were being proposed in Oregon today, I could not be sitting here before you supporting the OSHA budget, because the business entities that I represent would not be supportive of the program. The federal program was a costly mandate that provided very stiff penalties, broad sweeping penalties to employers who did not enact very specific standards in their workplace. It also required payment of up to, I believe it was 90 days for repetitive motion injuries. This is not in any way, shape, or form the same program. What this program is a tool and a resource that directly goes to benefit the people who are paying those premiums to begin with. And I heard a question a moment ago about budget. Yes, we represent employers who understand that the premiums need to come down. What better way to bring those premiums down than to provide a resource to the businesses and the employers that will directly reduce their claims? I understand from OSHA that 30% of workers' comp claims are soft tissue injuries. My clients provide a resource that will help employers reduce those claims and therefore reduce the premiums. I've been around this building a long time, and one thing that I have learned is legislators tend to like, if there is a fee, if there is a tax, if there is any kind of charge, they want the person paying that fee, tax, or charge to benefit. And this program directly benefits the individuals who are paying those premiums. I also want to emphasize, and it was probably, you could probably tell by my last statement, that there is no general fund money being used for this program. This is all completely derived from the workers' comp premiums. As was stated earlier, this program is a $1.8 million program per year. I know that it's very painful when we start talking about costs, but I am prepared to meet with each member of the committee and talk to you about alternative ways that we can reduce the budget, in addition to reducing the workers' comp claim that this program, the workers' comp claims that this program does address. We believe that there are other ways and better ways to make budget cuts that do not directly impact the employers who are paying the premium. I don't think I can state my case any better than Mr. Schmidt has already stated it. He is in the phase where my other clients are right now. He is just finding out about the program, and one of the main criticisms that I heard about this program is that, well, nobody knows about it, nobody's using it, so if it goes away, nobody's going to notice. I think that's a terrible shame, because employers, as I'm finding out, are just now finding out about it, independently of what I've done. Multifamily Housing Council is another client that I represent, came to me and asked me what I knew about the program, and it was only a week after I had met Mr. Molitor. People are just finding out about it. Let's give them the opportunity to use the program, to use the consulting services that are available, and reduce the types of claims that make up 30% of the workers' comp claims. I am going to be kind and not read all of the letters that I've handed out, but I would like to just highlight for you the businesses that have benefited and the different areas around the state that have used this program and who have benefited and who have written testimonials to many of you about the program. These businesses are located in Portland, Eugene, Grants Pass, Hood River, Bend, Roseburg, and Prineville, and those are just the ones that have written to us within the last couple of days. We originally believed that this hearing would take place, this segment of the budget would take place on Monday, and so we had anticipated many more employers coming here and talking to you about the sorts of problems that they need to address in their workplaces, but it is broad-based across the state. This is not just one segment of the state. Every one of you have constituents in the business industry or in the business sector that will benefit from this program. Madam Chairman, I'm going to end my testimony at this point unless there are specific questions. I have asked Mr. Molitor to outline for you how his program works, how his consulting firm works, and one important issue is how the program helps to leverage federal funds that come into Oregon. And I want to thank you so much for giving us this opportunity to speak and for being attentive and hearing our testimony.
Thank you. I would just share with Mr. Molitor, I don't know if you've testified here before, but a lot of the committee members have other committees. They're testifying on their bills, so they're having to run in and out and some meetings that they've had previously, and we're just trying to be very attentive to be here, but that's part of the problem, is that they have other committees they have to go testify on their bills. So, welcome, good morning, and if you'll introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Molitor, and I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, and I'd like to briefly introduce my organization. We're a not-for-profit corporation. We are partially funded by the Department of Commerce, and we're part of a national network. Our funding is about one-third federal dollars, so the remainder comes from state state funds or state resources and contributions from the private sector, mostly in the form of fees. Every $2 that's awarded to one of our clients for one of these projects is potentially matched by a dollar of federal funds, which helps us reach out to smaller companies like Mr. Schmidt's companies that normal consulting firms would find too costly to market to. Therefore, it's a resource that is intended to be statewide and not just concentrated in the Willamette Valley and Portland metropolitan area. The Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership's mission is to provide information, decision support, and implementation assistance to smaller manufacturing firms in adopting new, more advanced manufacturing technologies, techniques, and business practices. And one of the very useful state tools that we've found to help companies become more competitive and to reduce costs has been the Worksite Redesign Program. I believe you have a sheet that looks like this that lists clients that we're working with who have received or who are applying for grants and assistance under this program. I'd like to describe very briefly three different companies, since they're not here to testify on their own behalf, who have received or who are applying for these grants, to give you an idea of the scope of benefit that this is actually yielding for Oregon's manufacturers and other businesses as well. Lam Weston received a grant award of $150,000. They're in Umatilla County in Western Oregon. They're a food products company. They had have a packing area with a belt that comes by that requires reaching, twisting, and basically potentially injury-causing motion. The solution was to redesign the belt line to automate the sorting process and reduce reaching and twisting motion. And this has been beneficial to their workers and provides for similar companies a solution that was not available to purchase off the shelf. In a new grant proposal submitted that will be submitted in May of this year is for Pendleton Flour Mills, $140,000 in Umatilla County. It's a mixing plant, and they're adding value to the flour by packaging it in smaller containers to be able to export to the to eastern countries that use this for, I think, primarily for their noodles, actually.
Soft white wheat.
Soft white wheat, exactly. And this is a rapidly growing export market. The problem is that the bags weigh 57 pounds. I'm sure that must be some metric conversion. And they're not accustomed to, in their production facility, to handling these pallets stacked with bags. So the solution has been to design a robotic stacking device. The estimated cost is $100,000. Three other companies in the area accessing this new higher value added export market also could use this solution. Hammond Angus Ranch in LeGrand, Oregon, in Union County, was awarded in February of 2001 a $45,000 grant. They're a mint processing still, and they had a problem where they could not find a solution off the shelf. Truck and trailer couplings were done manually 8 to 10 times a shift, and there were have been shoulder injuries due to this heavy lifting that they were unable to avoid. So we're assisting them in designing a power unit that can be adapted to any trailer and configured in 10 minutes to be able to eliminate this heavy lifting. Understanding the time constraint that the committee has, I'd like to conclude my testimony there and ask or invite you to ask questions.
Excellent testimony, and we appreciate you coming here and being here, and appreciate what you do with your company or your business to help people so that we don't have further injuries. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Next, we have Dana. Van Haverbeck. Have I crucified your name as well?
You're close. Van Haverbeck. Madam Chair,
good morning.
Members of the committee. I'm Dana Van Haverbeck, and I'm here also to testify in support of the Worksite Redesign program. I can't say enough about how much I support this program. Just to give you a little background, my understanding of it is that there are state dollars that are utilized in two different ways. People can apply for grants in two different ways, one of which is that a product can be developed. So we heard Mr. Schmidt talk about a prototype. With that product, it does not belong to anyone but the state of Oregon. And so any business that can utilize a similar product can apply for a product grant once that prototype has been developed. So as you've listened to testimony, this is a program that allows for every business in the state of Oregon to benefit from those initial dollars. And it, since it belongs to the state of Oregon, no one else is going to produce this. It's almost like a public domain. People can utilize the information and the effort that's gone into this product to adapt it to their need as well. It's leveraging that I've never heard of before. So there are two different grants that you can apply for, the initial prototype, the development of the prototype, as well as the development of the machine once the prototype has been developed. We've been lucky enough to be recipients of both types of grants. The first grant that we had was to purchase two auto loaders. They were a product development grant. You can apply for it, and the amount of money that is matched by state dollars, by Oregon OSHA, is determined by how many employees you have. So it's a very equitable program that looks at the amount of risk that you may have and the amount of benefit that you can gain by changing a problem within your work program. So we bought two of those auto loaders, and they significantly reduced the amount of material handling efforts that we put in to producing our product. The second grant that we got was to build a prototype nailing machine. We looked everywhere, could not find one. We found Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. Our issue is that we don't have the management capability within our staff to be able to manage anything new, a new prototype. We were matched up with Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership. They did the follow-through of the whole project for us. What they were not wanting to do is to be our liaison with Oregon OSHA. We were fine with that, so we did that ourselves. It's an excellent match with their mission, which is also a nonprofit, so I understand it fairly well. And we were able to utilize their management capability as well as their engineering capability to help us get through this grant. We now have a nailing machine on our work floor that is operational. So when Representative Butler asked, you know, have you been able to follow through? Yes, we have. It's made a huge difference in our ability for, our workforce is employing people with developmental disabilities. Many of these workers age more rapidly than our general workforce. We have workers who are working there, our oldest being 70 years old, our youngest being 22. Our average workforce is about 46 years old. But people are able to work there longer because we have taken some of the bending and stooping and pushing and pulling out of the work that they do so they can work there longer. I'm sure they'd love to show you what we've been able to do with this. We've received a second grant that allows for our stacking process to change. It was the least ergonomic within our work site, and we're in the process of completing that grant as well. I think it would be a mistake, a grave mistake, to do away with this amount in our budget. It leverages dollars, it allows every Oregon business to utilize what we've gained from it, and it doesn't make sense. If we truly want to eliminate worksite injuries, this is a program that will do it. And Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership has a mission to not make money. They have a mission to support Oregon business. It's a good match, and I would like us to look at different ways to balance our budget. Are there any questions?
Thanks, Dana. Okay. 1995 being lobbied about Shangri-La. It's very similar to our Opportunity Foundation in Redmond.
Yes.
And they had the wood workshop as well.
Daryl Wilson. Very good.
Any questions? Representative Butler?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That explains a great deal. I knew that Shangri-La was a name that I had heard before, and so really, you're in a competitive business, but as a nonprofit, is that right?
Correct. So we produce a product.
Right. this particular resource for you is extremely invaluable. It isn't in a competitive place, in a competitive work environment where you'd have 15 people doing the same thing, but without working with a handicap and so forth, you'd be in a much different market niche and ability to compete, perhaps.
That's correct.
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
Linda Barno? Sounds an awful lot like Quarno.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the time to talk. My name is Linda Barno, and I am the Workers' Compensation Manager for Schnitzer Steel Industries. I'm coming here to tell you that we strongly support the Worksite Modified Program. A little bit of background, Schnitzer Steel Industries is a homegrown company started at the turn of the last century. We annually process and recycle over 1.5 million tons of scrap metal, selling to both domestic and foreign markets. Including supplying recycled scrap to our steel mill in McMinnville, which we're very proud of. We currently have in Oregon facilities in Portland, McMinnville, Eugene, Bend, Grants Pass, White City, with well over 500 employees in Oregon, and over 400 of those employees represented by labor unions and collective bargaining agreements. We're proud to say that our average salary for our union force is almost $36,000 a year. And we boast that as a family wage manufacturing company, we try to provide not only real living wages, but the type of health and welfare benefits often mentioned as desirable. One of the reasons for me to come today is that in order to maintain the costs of health and welfare benefits, to make them a viable source for our workers, we have to go to the root of why we need health and welfare benefits, and that is keeping our employers safe on the job. I truly live by the idea that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Our dealings with OSHA and the Worksite Program came about when we developed a new system to further refine our scrap metal recycling. We have two parts of metal that we recycle, ferrous, which sticks to a magnet, that's as much as I know about it, and the non-ferrous, which doesn't stick to a magnet. We have a large shredder that can take a car in 8 seconds, make it little pieces the size of an inch. That's part of our scrap recycling. But what we found is that we were losing a lot of our valuable non-ferrous metals, and we wanted to recapture that. We developed what I call the ultimate mousetrap, which is a series of belts that go through, and workers stand and pick out the non-ferrous pieces. It's been very successful. As a workers' compensation manager, we have systems to try and see problems coming before they need medical attention. And within a week of starting this process, we're getting all these little 5x7 forms that say, basically, I hurt. And I hurt while I'm doing this. We were having complaints with backs, with shoulders, with sides, with ribs from leaning over this conveyor. And we have quite a group of mechanically inclined individuals working for us, and we worked and we worked and we worked. We tried every homemade remedy we could think of to solve this problem, which was becoming quite chronic. One day, really out of frustration, I called Worksite Redesign Program, and luckily Mike Lula answered the phone, and he said, I'll be out there tomorrow. And he came out, and we walked through, and he talked to the workers, and he talked to us, and he said, I've got an idea. And we work together, and we're very proud to say that we've developed an individual ergonomic platform. When we walked out and we see four or five people standing next to each other, the thing that stood out is that we had someone that's 5 foot tall, someone that's 6 foot six, someone that weighs 300 pounds, someone that weighs 110 pounds, and someone that's pregnant and can't reach right now. And I knew that at 4:15, I'd have a whole different group of people coming. So your typical platforms could never meet individuals. It just met the task. The platforms that we've developed, and we now have a prototype being used on our floor, we're making three more at this time, it's individually controlled by the individual. As they come to the work site, They can change the seat height. They can change the level of the platform. They can change the width. We're not having complaints anymore. It's just one of the ways that we can keep our employees safe. We can keep them longer. They're our most valuable resource. This would not be possible without the worksite redesign grant.
Sure. Thank you. Who paid for the improvements? Did the grant cover those? Or
the grant is a combination grant where we received, I think right off the top of my head, $55,000 in grant. We have to match 10% of that. So it was that combination.
Was it technical advice or the money that made the difference in your situation?
It was both. In metals markets, it's a very tight economic times. So without this grant, we would not have been able to go forward with a final product such as this. We probably, to be honest, would still be trying our homemade techniques, trying to adjust.
And the program gave you the technical advice to know how to make the seats go up and down or backwards and forwards?
Exactly. First, what we did is we researched anywhere, trying to find a device that would meet this. There's a committee that you have to go through, and they're very strict. And the first time we put forward our product, they weren't satisfied with it. We had to go back a second time and work out glitches. Mike Lula and the Worksite Redesign Group found us design people. They got us in touch with OMAP that helped find products, find manufacturers that were willing to work with us to go through the many redevelopments and changes. You know, we started off with one project, and we fine-tuned it several times, and they've worked with us.
And the design committee was part of the program.
Yes.
That you were submitting your prototypes or
exactly,
your...
Exactly, very much so.
Okay, thank you.
And in conclusion, this platform is available to all Oregon employers. As part of the grant process, we'll be making presentations to college, universities, industries, and health conferences. We submit articles to trade magazines. We'll also have available the CAD drawings, list of materials, names of vendors and fabricators involved in the prototype development, and the names of our key personnel to contact about the project. We feel that this model, a prototype of the platform, will have a profound savings in Oregon for all line services industries, from food products to anything dealing with a conveyor belt. We see a large savings in workers' compensation and health and welfare benefits. And as we struggle in a competitive and ever-growing workforce, we really feel that the Worksite Redesign Program is just a very necessary part. So thank you for your time, and if you have any more questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Hagen.
Oh, Madam Chair, just to put a human face on this company, I've had some interaction with it as a dentist and in other ways, and I am impressed with the health and welfare benefits that they offer. They treat their employees very well, and their employees are very nice people. I also had another interesting encounter with them. I decided to clean up my dental office and farm, and I loaded up a horse trailer with all the scrap metal we could find, and we took it to the Eugene facility. And I didn't know how to do it, so some kind man showed me how to weigh the trailer in, you know, and weigh the trailer out after it was emptied. And they sorted it, and they carefully examined my dental x-ray machines with a device to see if they were radioactive. And it was an interesting experience. So as we were clearing the program, I sent my son in to get our check. He came down $1.40.
That's a lot of work. But we appreciate any business that we can get. Okay.
And I would just add that your Bend office has been very helpful to us getting rid of old car bodies on the BLM that we drag into our ranch and try to get off the public property.
We're the rancher's friends. You
yes.
need titles.
Thank you very much. Is that at this time, then we're going to take a 5-minute break, and we'll come back and have testimony from the agency.
Senate Bill 5507. And we also have public testimony from Judy, and I'll let you pronounce your last name. And does Nancy want to come up with you as well? And Cindy?
Nancy
Grass.
Cindy White.
Nancy
Grass.
That's pretty easy. And White. And Cindy White. Now, how do you pronounce your last name?
Signet.
Signet.
It means baby swan in French.
Baby swan. Oh, how nice.
Chinier.
Uh-huh.
But everybody messes it up.
Okay. Welcome, and introduce yourself for the record, if you would. And are the other folks going to come forward with you, Nancy and Cindy? Bring another chair up, and we'll have you all at once.
My name is Judy Signet. I am a member of Oregon Public Employees Union. I'm the vice president of the local at DCBS. I'm also a member of the board of the Oregon AFL-CIO. And been long active. I've worked for the state of Oregon for somewhere over 20 years, first of it as 9 sessions at the Oregon legislature as a staff person, and then I've been with Oregon OSHA since 1987, and since 1988 I've been the creator and coordinator for the Oregon OSHA Resource Center. I really want to make 2 points, and I apologize that I don't have written testimony for you today. I was anticipating on Monday, which is what we had originally been told, and I didn't find out until late yesterday afternoon that it was this morning. I will provide written testimony, which will be in much more detail than what I'm going to say today.
You provide that to us.
Oh, yeah, you'll have it this afternoon.
Thank you.
Just that I have to do it during the noon hour. First thing I want to talk about is the ratio of managers to classified staff within the agency, and I'll provide you with this chart that I'm going to speak about. In February of 1994, the ratio was 6.1 to 1 manager, and that meant that there were 143 management exec staff and 870 classified staff. As of 2/28/2001, there's 885 classified staff, or an increase of 15, and there's 191 management exec staff, or if my math is correct, that's an increase of 48. And the ratio is now 1 management to 4.6. classified staff. We think that that's a little bit out of control. I could understand if management staff went up a little bit, but 48 to 15 is a little bit out of control. In 1995, there was a change of administrators in my agency, and there were 22 in OSHA. There were 22 management slots at that time, as near as we can tell from old staffing charts, and now there are 29. That's an increase of 7, with no increase in classified staff that we could discern from the charts that we had. You've already been talked to quite a bit about the worksite redesign program. Corner of the world, the Resource Center, we have another program that benefits greatly to employers in Oregon. We provide safety videos to employers, and the workload, they want us to market these things, which means that there's more business. And last year, almost exactly a year ago, we were granted a limited duration position. At that time, the video library was sending in and out 154 videos. In other words, 154 went out, approximately 154 came back. This is average. Today, in other words, the last quarter that we had, which was January through March of this year, we averaged 209. Well, one of the positions they're deleting is the second person who works in our video library that we got as a limited duration position. this position is being eliminated. It was eliminated in their original submission package, all the limited durations. And we just are at a loss to understand how we're going to provide the services to Oregon businessmen and women to with this level that we have now with only one person. It's impossible. It's just not going to happen. And before any of this, before they submitted or anything, they didn't even ask us how many were coming in and going out and what our workload was. So we were at a very big loss. We have the same problem with some of the others, positions that they're going to talk about cutting. And these two are in the consultation program. One of them works in a program called 21D, which is 90% federally funded. And there's four positions in that program, and they're proposing to cut four, those four positions, that are which are 90% federally funded. So we're at a loss to see where that gains the state a lot of money, about $60,000 for the biennium, which if you look at the pay scales, which I went in and poked around the Internet the other night and found the pay scales for the managers, and that's less than what one manager. So I don't know, testimony will be much more detailed, ratios and what the average number of inspections done by consultants and average, and I shouldn't say inspections, average number of consultations done in the safety field and in the health field and in ergonomics, and average number of inspections done by the enforcement staff. So you can see how many will not get done now. So if you've got any questions for me, I'd be glad to answer them, if I can.
I would just say, Judy, that I'm sorry the inconvenience when you thought you were Monday. We try so hard to get these budgets online, and lots of things happen that sometimes are out of our control, so we're sorry for the inconvenience.
Yeah, I understand that. It's just sometimes it lands at a bad moment. I worked for a man named E.D. Debs Potts for a number of years, and I was well familiar with what... But ways and means stuff.
Well, that helps that you know the process and understand.
Yes.
Thank you for your testimony, and we will
Thank
look
you.
Forward to your later report. And
okay.
I appreciate
I'll try and get it over here this afternoon.
Okay.
And Bruce Moy.
Sure.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives on the committee. Can you hear me? Last time I...
You might just pull that a bit closer.
Closer. Okay. My name is Nancy Graff, and I'm here as a citizen, a taxpayer, a member of OPEU, and I also happen to work at Oregon OSHA. But I am not here as a representative of Oregon OSHA. I'm here on my own time. I'm taking vacation time today, so I'm not here representing our agency. But I'm one of the four consultants that is in the 21D consultation program, and the information that I have given you that has been passed out is the testimony or the information that I presented at the MLAC committee. And attachment A was the first notification on March 15th from Michelle Patterson that advised us that there were going to be some cuts in Oregon OSHA. And then attached behind that is yesterday's memo from Mr. DeLuca, letting us know about this meeting today, which we were all kind of, again, as Judy said, we were prepared to come on Monday. And then attachment B, I'm just kind of showing you what I'll be referring to, is information from the cooperative agreement with 21D. It's a consultation program that's funded 90% from federal OSHA and then 10% from Oregon OSHA or from the workers' comp premium assessment operating funds. And so the information, and then the last email is the one from Debbie Lincoln, where she's saying, everybody just be aware of the budget cuts, but we have no final decisions yet, but I just thought I'd include that information so that you know where the consultation program, what we're emphasizing. And I guess my main concern, and I certainly can't speak for the state-funded consultation program, which has a lot more consultants, but the 21D consultation program, which is four consultants, two two health consultants and two safety consultants, has been a program that has been with Oregon OSHA, formerly APD, since the agency came into existence, and also with federal OSHA, which is the federal equivalent. What they said was when federal OSHA was first came into existence, that as an enforcement agency, they were also obligated to assist employers with the consultation program. My main concern as a taxpayer is our agency coming to the Ways and Means Committee and saying we have these four consultant positions to cut, that they're funded 90% or $280,000 per year. That's not every 2 years, that's per year. So for a biennium, that would be like $560,000. It would be over $500,000 that we're just, our agency has proposed that that money is not needed or not necessary. And I guess in times like this where we're looking at smaller and smaller budgets and programs that are needing to be cut, that I find it illogical that our agency would consider money that doesn't even come from the state of Oregon, but that comes from federal OSHA, and say that they don't really want that money. As a taxpayer, I find that illogical, and so I guess why I'm here is to ask you folks to really consider that when you're looking at the budget, because there are four consultation positions that are primarily funded and the through federal OSHA, and the 32,000, I think it was 31,626 that the state actually kicks in as their 10% portion. That money saved per year would not even fund one consultation position. So Judy has.
Yeah, I just wanted to, the program is aimed at small businesses in high hazard industries. So it's a specific program that assists small businesses that are in high hazard, and it's dedicated to that. And I just wanted you to understand that the 21D program has a specific focus to it.
Thank you very much. Any questions, Nancy?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I do want to express my appreciation for these ladies coming forward on their own time to talk about the concerns. And these are cuts for assistance in high hazard areas and small businesses.
Four of the positions are.
Are there an equivalent number of management positions that are being eliminated? These are just...
No.
So you leave the managers and cut the workers. Okay.
Well, I might add one other thing is the four positions in 21D are included in the six positions that are proposed to be eliminated. So there's six consultation positions to be eliminated, plus six enforcement or compliance officer positions to be eliminated.
And these are long-term positions that you've
they are full-time positions,
long-term, but I mean...
Not limited duration.
But I mean, you've been with the agency a long period of time.
73?
The consultation program that I am in, the 21D program that was formerly 7C1, has been in existence, I believe, since 1972.
But you've been there since?
I have been in the 21D program since 1988. And they call it the Senate Bill 21900, which went to start creating state-funded consultation positions, came into existence in 1990.
And final question, Madam
Chair.
Is there an opportunity where you have this much tenure, there'll be an opportunity for you to move around within the agency or some other
Certainly,
agency.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions? Okay. Cindy, you're next. Okay. Oops. Judy. didn't know how many there's.
My name is Cindy White, and can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I appreciate you taking time to hear my concerns today. I am an ergonomic consultant at Oregon OSHA in Portland. I am here today, though, as a private citizen and a taxpayer and not representing Oregon OSHA. And I'm here today to talk about the proposed cuts to the Department of Consumer and Business Services budget. I have been with Oregon OSHA 5.5 years in my position as an ergonomic consultant. My position is one of 6 consultation positions in Oregon OSHA that has been identified to be cut from the DCBS budget. During the 1999-2000 fiscal year, ergonomic consultants averaged 41 consultations per consultant. That does not include some management consultations that we also do. That would increase that number to about 46 per year. If this position is eliminated, fewer employers will receive assistance to reduce claims that make up 41% of all the disabling claims and cost Oregon businesses millions of dollars. Currently, the average cost for a claim in Oregon is estimated at approximately $10,000 per claim for direct cost. As an ergonomic consultant, I am invited into businesses. Again, this is a voluntary program, and have assisted many employers and employees by educating them on ways on things that they can do to control ergonomic risk, and by helping them generate ideas to eliminate or minimize those risks. Many of these ideas are low cost, and yet save employers money and keep employees working and improve productivity. As I mentioned earlier, and as Nancy mentioned, 6 consultation programs in Oregon OSHA are proposed to be cut, and 4 of these positions, as Nancy mentioned, are federally funded through a grant and would save the state of Oregon only $31,626, yet cost Oregon employers by having fewer services available to keep employees safe and working. In addition, 9 other cuts of frontline staff are proposed by Oregon OSHA, and all of these will greatly impact Oregon's working men and women. I'm here today just to urge you to take a very close look at where these cuts are coming from, to consider other means so these vital programs can continue to exist. And if the cuts occur, I encourage you to look at other positions other than frontline staff. So again, thank you very much.
Thank you, Cindy. And are there any questions of Cindy? Sorry, my committee's gotten a little small here, but people had to run to meetings. I thank the 3 of you very much, and we'll look forward to your information, Judy, and thank you, Nancy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you want to take a few minutes and have the agency answer questions from yesterday's meeting?
Yeah,
there's a handout.
Okay. If the agency would like to come forward and visit with us a little bit about the handout they gave us on answering the questions that were asked by the committee, whoever wants to do that. You gave us the response, which I'm trying to find. Debbie?
Basically, what we're asking you to do is to walk through the memo that you handed out with response to the questions from yesterday, and then I think we'll probably defer the hearing on the budget until Monday.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We did respond to some of the questions that you asked yesterday. In this memo, Representative Butler asked about the cents per hour history, and the first attachment, I apologize for the numbers being fairly small, but we're trying to get all on one page, shows how that evolved and how the equal sharing of the cost evolved between employers and employees. Originally, this was a work day assessment, and originally workers picked up the cost of the program that did exist, and as various programs were added, those costs were juggled, and eventually, I think in 1988, the amount paid into those reserves became equal between employers and employees. In 1995, when the Workers' Benefit Fund was pulled together from all these other reserves, then the legislature proactively agreed that this would be an equal sharing between employers and employees. So it's been a kind of a long evolution as programs were added to the Workers' Benefit Fund and funding mechanisms were developed. The second bit of information that we've provided is response to Representative Hayden's question about workplace illnesses. If you look on the landscape page, you'll see the kinds of workplace illnesses that we see in the system, including blood and circulatory diseases. Carpal tunnel syndrome is classified as an illness in this rather than an injury. And there are a lot of other disorders here that I've never heard of, dorsopathies, I have no idea what that is. But tendonitis and hepatitis, those kinds of things that can be encountered in the workplace are the kinds of illnesses we see. Then on the back of that page, you get a sense of how the frequency of those illnesses related to the frequency of injuries. And again, the illnesses really form a very small part of the claims that we see. The other thing, Senator Dukes asked if we have seen a change in the mix of illnesses and injuries over time as the workplace has become more modern, and actually we haven't. Carpal tunnel, for example, its frequency is the same today as it was 12 years ago. So the mix actually has stayed pretty much the same over the last decade. Let's see. Then the last question that we addressed,
Hayden.
Just to comment on this question before you go on, I think my confusion was not understanding the occupational injury and illness classification system. I would have thought that a hernia was an injury and not an illness. So I think it's a matter of, I think my confusion was a matter of semantics, not understanding a somewhat arcane classification system, I guess. I would note that carpal tunnel syndrome shouldn't be lumped under a nervous system. It's more properly under a musculoskeletal injury. But I can see, I wouldn't think that a hernia would be an illness or a disease. I would think a hernia would be an injury. So I think that's why I took exception to the large number of job-related illnesses. I could not understand that. And I think the answer is that injuries have been defined as illnesses.
Madam Chair and Representative Hayden, I think you're exactly right. I wouldn't have expected carpal tunnel to be in the illness category, but I think if we rearrange that, our statistics wouldn't match over the years. So.
Madam Chair, were they designed in that way in order to expedite claim processing, or?
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I don't know, and I'll ask John if he does.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, I'm not sure either. It predates my experience in the workers' compensation world, and I go back about 20 years. So I think it's more of a case that these were probably developed quite some time ago, and as Debbie mentioned, to change those sorts of things begins to disrupt the comparison on year by year. A lot of these are based on national standards of reporting by insurance companies as well.
Okay. Madam Chair, I guess that's okay. I don't know if in the end it makes a lot of difference, but I'm sort of curious as to why that developed. It sort of flies, the definitions sort of fly in the face of what a layman would understand a hernia to be, or a carpal tunnel to be, or a broken leg to be. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions of members of the committee?
Oh, yeah, I wanted to say that I did have one more comment on that. I did notice with some interest that there seem to be three major categories of incidents that cause claims. One would be probably largely hernias, 20%. And I could understand that. We just heard testimony about lifting 57-pound packs of flour. You know, you try to lift two of those at a time, and I can see how you get that kind of an injury or illness as it is. And that diseases of hearing, I can also understand that. You work in a loud environment, and you get hearing obscurity decreased. So you seem to have three categories, 32%. For the nervous system, 20% for hernias, and 38% for things like carpal tunnel. So, and I see that what I would really consider illnesses like viral hepatitis are 0.3%. So true illnesses are really a pretty small part of it. So, thank you, Madam Chair. I just thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting, and I think we even had the agency wondering why some of those classifications are there.
Madam Chair, if I may, I would just like to touch on one thing that I reported on yesterday and that Senator Dukes had requested I review. I was definitely wrong in my reporting that the major contributing cause standard is not used more frequently in denial of older workers' claims. The exact opposite is true. As one ages, you find the use of the major contributing cause denial increasing. And Senator Dukes was absolutely right in her reading of the report. I just wanted to make sure to clear the record. I apologize for that.
And would you follow up with her since she's unable to be here at this point to let her know that? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, while we're admitting our mistake, there's a typo in my memo. On the back page, I have a 1.7% decrease. It's actually 17% decrease. And we try very carefully to bring you accurate information, and we will cut down on these. This type of error. Thank you. Now, where are we?
I think that's it for today, Madam Chair. And Monday we will complete the budget overview for the Workers' Compensation Division and start the budget overview for Oregon Occupational Safety and Health Administration and the Workers' Health Board.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That we are adjourned until Monday.
We will not be having any public testimony.